Howdy, folks. Today, we're going to talk about James chapter 3 and verse 13. Here, on this eve of a new year, our subject matter from this verse is this. Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. So, we're going to let the Bible do a whole lot of talking for us today, because I really thought I wanted to cover James 3, 13 through 18, and then I thought, well, it'd be a little bit difficult to cover all of it in one podcast in a reasonable amount of time, especially some of the subject matter going forward, and it ties into, because James 3:16, envying and strife, ties into some of the things we're going to talk about going forward in chapter 4, etc. So I just decided I'll break it down. And if you're talking about wisdom, you know you got to use the book of Proverbs. I mean, this is one of those, just turn and flip in your Bible the book of Proverbs, and you know you're going to have a hard time missing lessons about wisdom. And probably the most difficult thing is not just to read the book of Proverbs as the podcast itself. Well, in Proverbs chapter 1, says in verse 5, a wise man will hear and increase in learning. So this question, who is a wise man? We're going to let the Bible answer it in various different ways. This verse tells us a wise man is somebody that listens and will increase in learning. Now we have to be a little cautious there, right? Have to be a little cautious there. There is the instruction in Mark 4:24, where Jesus says, take heed what ye hear, and with measure you meet, it shall be measured you, and unto you that hear shall be more given. I mean, we got to be cautious about what we hear. Some people are too willing to listen to things that they ought not be listening to. We need to be careful what we're listening to. There's another proverb. There's another statement in the book of Proverbs. Let me flip here. I think it's, I know it's later. Let me see here. The instruction, chapter 19. So chapter 19, verse 27. Cease, my son, to hear the instruction that causeth to err from the words of knowledge. So a wise man is somebody that hears with caution, right? Making sure what we're listening to and who we're listening to are the right things. And of course, that could be a lesson all in itself, but I think you get the main point. Continuing with our question, who is a wise man? In Proverbs chapter 9, verses 8 through 10, connects to the point in verse 5 of chapter 1, says, reprove not a scorner, lest he hate thee. Rebuke a wise man, he will love thee. Give instruction to a wise man, he'll be yet wiser. Teach a just man, he will increase in learning. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the holy is understanding. So a wise man will take rebuke, again, with the previous cautions in mind, and will take instruction. A wise man will get wiser. See, there are a lot of people that reach a certain point of wisdom, understanding, knowledge, etc., and they think, I've arrived. No, the wise keep growing. You're a sponge. You want to learn more and more and more and more. So continuing with that into the next chapter in Proverbs chapter 10, who is a wise man? Chapter 10 and verse 23 of the book of Proverbs says, it's a sport to a fool to do mischief, but a man of understanding hath wisdom. So who is a wise man? A man of understanding. A man that uses discretion. A man that understands. Understanding is a very, very important thing. There are a lot of people, for example, just using the scriptures, there are a lot of people that are ever learning, 2 Timothy 3 and verse 7, and never able to come to the knowledge of the truth. And part of the problem, well, in the context of 2 Timothy chapter 3, is talking about women that were laden of sins and led captive by those who appear to be godly but are not. There's many different reasons that people might have an increase of information, but they don't grow in wisdom, and understanding is that reason. And the parable of the sower, or at least when Jesus is explaining the parable of the sower, in Matthew 13 and verse 19, he says, "When anyone heareth the word of the kingdom and understandeth not, then cometh the wicked one and catcheth away that which is sown in his heart. This is he which receives seed by the wayside." I've had Bible discussions with a lot of people over the years, thousands and thousands and thousands of Bible studies, and a lot of the times, the problem isn't that they don't know the scriptures. The problem is that they don't understand the scriptures. And then they don't have wisdom because they lack in understanding. So discretion, understanding, things that combine in the meaning of that word, you need to have that to be a wise man. In Proverbs 14:16, scripture says, "A wise man feareth and departeth from evil, but the fool rageth and is confident." Think about people that have no fear of God. How wise are those people? The psalmist said in Psalm 14, verses 1 through 3, he said, "The fool," of course, that's the opposite of somebody wise, right? "The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. They are corrupt. They've done abominable works. There is none that doeth good. Lord, look down from heaven upon the children of men and see if there were any that did understand. See, God, they're all gone aside. They're become filthy. There's none that doeth good, no, not one." He's talking about the workers of iniquity who have no knowledge, verse 4. But then the contrast of that, verse 5 says, "There were they in great fear, for God is in the generation of the righteous." The righteous, the wise, they fear, but fools don't. They don't fear God. They don't fear consequences. And because of that, they don't fear enough to depart from evil. The fool, the opposite of a wise person, rages and is confident. They just keep going against wisdom, not concerned with what's going to happen thereafter. So a wise man is someone that will fear and depart from evil. Another verse in Proverbs chapter 16 and verse 14 says, "The wrath of a king is as a messengers of death, but a wise man will pacify it." I love this point, and it's a little bit hard sometimes to pick what scriptures we're going to go through because there's always so many that we could talk about, or most of the time there's so many that we talk about. When we think about those in positions of authority, kings or civil government, you know, in Romans chapter 13, it says in verses 1 through 7, "Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is none power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Whoso therefore resisteth the power, resist the ordinance of God, that they resist shall receive to themselves damnation. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Wilt thou then not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same. For he is the minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid. For he beareth not the sword in vain, for he is the minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. Wherefore you must needs be subject, not only for wrath, but also for conscience' sake. For this cause pay ye tribute also, for they are God's ministers, attending continually upon this very thing. Render therefore to all their dues, tribute to whom tribute is due, custom to whom custom is due, fear to whom fear is due, honor to whom honor." And then in like manner, Peter wrote in 1 Peter 2:13 through 16, "Submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, whether it be the king as supreme or governors, them that are sent by him for the punishment of evildoers, for the praise of them that do well. For so is the will of God, that with well-doing you may put to silence the ignorance of foolish men, as free, not using your liberty for a cloak of maliciousness, but as servants of God." I mean, the next verse even says to honor all, to love the brotherhood, to fear God, to honor the king. That's 1 Peter 2 and verse 17. So the wise will pacify the wrath of a king. But see, the fool, he doesn't. He doesn't think. He doesn't reason. He doesn't understand. Now, it is not that civil government submits themselves to God, but there are for just a quick, brief application and understanding this, God ordained three organizations, for a lack of better terms, in the Bible to carry out his work on earth. First, the family, the home, marriage. You see that with Adam and Eve. Within the construct of the home, a man provides for his wife, 1 Timothy 5 and verse 8, brings up his children, nurture them in admonition of the Lord, Ephesians 6 and verse 4. A woman shows her virtue, Proverbs 31, 10 through 31, and how she reacts to her children, her husband, etc., etc. Within that organization, the personal, individual, physical needs of families are met. The second is civil government. Like we just read in Romans 13 and 1 Peter 2, Romans 13, 1 through 7, 1 Peter 2, 13 through 17, civil government is there to punish evildoers. They're there to deal with the carnal things, the physical things, the worldly things. And then the organization that is there to care for the spiritual is the church. And Jesus established, he built his church, Matthew 16, 13 through 18. And it's not dealing with the things of the home. It's not dealing with the carnal things of civil authority. The kingdom is spiritual. It's, you know, when you think of verses like Romans 14, 17, the kingdom of God is not meat and drink, but righteousness and peace and joy and the Holy Ghost. So those organizations exist for purposes, one of those being civil government. And you understand God put civil government in place to take care of those who do things that are carnally wrong, physically wrong, and gave them the authority to execute judgment, to execute vengeance, gave them authority to carry out death sentences. Well, because that authority is in place, even though they're unjust governments, you are going to pacify those in that authority rather than go and contend against it. We're not marching. We're not out there causing problems. We're not putting ourselves on the radar. We as Christians are humble, loyal citizens, so long as that government doesn't require us to disobey God, in which case they did with the apostles in Acts 4 and Acts 5. And Peter and the other apostles, when they looked at that, Peter says, we ought to obey God rather than men, Acts 5, 29. So the only time we'll stand up is when they cause us to be put at odds with God. The rest of the time, we'll pacify that anger. Another one, who is a wise man, Proverbs 23 and verse 4, says, labor not to be rich. Cease from thine own wisdom. A wise man does not have his own wisdom. A wise man understands, like we are going to see as we go through James chapter 3 and verse 18, that wisdom is from above. Wisdom comes from God. Instead of ourselves, he's the creator. When we understand that, when we seek and know the Lord in greater ways, and when we understand the wisdom of men, I mean, think about this. In Romans chapter 11, and the context here is talking about the Jews and the Gentiles and the fulfillment of God's covenants of past and how the remnant is saved, etc. And Romans 11, 33 through 36 says, oh, the depth of the riches, both of the wisdom and knowledge of God, how unsearchable are his judgments and his ways past finding out. For who hath known the mind of the Lord, who hath been his counselor, who hath given first to him, and it should be recompensed unto him again. For of him and through him and to him are all things, to whom be glory forever. Amen. When you look at the wisdom of God, yeah, you know, I don't care about the wisdom of this world, my own wisdom. 1 Corinthians 3, 18 and 19, let no man deceive himself. If any man among you seem to be wise in this world, let him become a fool that he may be wise. For the wisdom of this world is foolish with God, for it is written, he taketh the wise in their own craftiness. And just to kind of steal from God here a little bit, Proverbs 23 and verse 4, the first point was labor not to be rich. Well, what's the world tell you? The world tells you labor to be rich, right? But when you consider what happens to wealth, Proverbs 23, 5, the very next verse, will thou set thy eyes upon that which is not? For riches certainly make themselves wings. They fly away as an eagle toward heaven. The wisdom of this world says, get an education, get a good job, build up your savings. The wisdom of God says all those things are temporary. The wisdom of God is contrary to the wisdom of the world in this way. In Matthew 6, when Jesus is talking to his disciples in what is called the Sermon on the Mount, he says in verses 19 through 21, lay not up for yourselves treasures upon earth, where moth and rust doth corrupt and where thieves break through and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt and where thieves do not break through and steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. The wisdom of God and the wisdom of the world are contrary to one another. So who is a wise man? The one that ceases from his own wisdom, from carnal wisdom. Proverbs 29, verse 1. And keeping up with what we've talked about already in James chapter 3 up to this point, the tongue, Proverbs 29, 11 says, a fool uttereth all his mind, but a wise man keepeth it in till afterwards. To know, I ought to shut up. I ought to step back and be quiet. I ought to be quiet. I ought to think. And Proverbs 17, verses 27 and 28 says, he that hath knowledge spareth his words, and a man of understanding is an excellent spirit. Even a fool, when he holdeth his peace, is counted wise. He that shutteth his lips is esteemed a man of understanding. So look, shut up. Don't show your lack of wisdom. Don't show your foolishness. A wise man guards that tongue. Isn't that what we've been talking about in James 3 up to this point? Absolutely. Flipping through the book of Ecclesiastes, a couple of points out of Ecclesiastes. We're looking at Solomon here, right? He pens about wisdom. This man's given wisdom from God. Let's learn some of it. He says in Ecclesiastes 2:14, the wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walketh in darkness, and I myself perceived all that one event happeneth to them all. Oh boy. Oh boy. The fool. He's not like a wise man. A wise man keeps his focus right. Proverbs 17:24 says, wisdom before him that hath understanding, but the eyes of a fool are in the ends of the earth. So think about that. The wise man's are in his head. The fool, though, nope, not at all. He's in darkness. We have to see things the way they are. We have to keep ourselves focused. Many applications to that point. If I'm going to be wise, I'm going to be somebody who discerns, who sees, who wants to see what's really there. We don't live in the world of make-believe. This is not Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. Stay focused. Wise man keeps his eyes where they belong, in his head, not everywhere else, not to the ends of the earth. You know, those people that just are always observing things that don't matter at all. Don't be that person. Ecclesiastes 8 and verse 5. Says, whoso keepeth the commandment shall feel no evil thing, and a wise man's heart discerneth both time and judgment. How focused are wise people? Well, wise people focus on time and judgment. Now, I want to combine that with what's said in chapter 9 of Ecclesiastes, and we're going to look at verse 11, and then we're going to go ahead and talk about that for a moment, and then we're going to go down further. Ecclesiastes 9:11 says, I returned and saw under the sun, the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, neither bread to the wise, nor yet riches to men of understanding, nor yet favor to men of skill, but time and chance happeneth to them all. So when you think about the point in Ecclesiastes 8 and verse 5, a wise man's heart discerns both time and judgment. We know when judgment's going to come. It's going to come when Jesus returns and judges, and we stand before the judgment seat of Christ, 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 10. We know that, but time, understanding time and chance. In the sports world, it is often said as athletes get older, well, physical skill diminishes, and people will personify time, and they'll say Father Time, right? They'll personify aging as Father Time. Well, look, 6 years ago, I could run 10 miles, no problem, 100 plus degree heat. I get up, eat a protein bar, drink, boom, go for a run. Get some water, carry it with me, but I don't need anything else. Now, I don't think I could walk 10 miles, let alone run 10 miles. So I understand time. I'm getting older. My body is failing in certain kind of ways. How many people are unaware of that? That just think they always have tomorrow. And guess what? We're going to talk about that in James 4:13 and following. People that think they always have tomorrow, they don't understand time. Then to combine that with Ecclesiastes 9:11, chance. And then put that with judgment. You may think, I have years to get my life right, but chance happens to us all. you not only get old and different things happen, but you could have anything occur. I'm sitting on the second story in a second story room in my house recording this podcast. I don't know if you can hear Taylor. She's in her bedroom, which is in the room next to me, and she's cracking up. It's actually been hard for me not to laugh. She's distracting me a little bit. I don't know if the microphone's picking up any of that, but she's having chronic laughter right now, which, hey, I love it. You know, just great to hear her happy. But I'm on the second story of a house. If you know anything about houses built in America today, unless you have some exceptional area, quality's not very good. Hey, man, when I look out this window right here, I'm looking out this window right here right now, a beautiful, huge mountain. You know what happens where there's mountains, right? Be earthquakes. Earthquake could hit. I could go from the second story to the first, no time. Yeah, life could be over right in the middle of this podcast, which you're not going to hear because I'm recording it to upload it later, but time could end. Are we aware of that? Wise men consider that. But I want you to notice as the context goes on in Ecclesiastes 9, because it makes multiple points. Verse 12 continues this point, but then the context just goes a little bit to talk about wisdom. And we're talking about how the world sees things differently than godly people. Notice this. So in verse 12 through verse 18, "For man also knoweth not his time, as the fishes that are taken in evil net, and as the birds that are caught in the snare, so are the sons of man snared in an evil time when it falls suddenly upon them." So talking about times, talking about things that are going on, that application there, think about what's going on in the world. When violence is going, when things are happening, that's the times right now. I live on the border of the United States of America and Mexico, and things are changing abruptly. It's already a violent place. Juarez, Mexico, right across the little creek that's called the Rio Grande River. There's a lot of violence there. Well, I'm aware of that. Well, what can happen living on this border? So going from there, verse 13 changes up a bit. It says, "This wisdom have I seen also under the sun, and it seems great unto me. There was a little city, few men within, and there came a great king against it and besieged it and built great bulwarks against it. Now there was found in it a poor wise man, and he by his wisdom delivered the city. Yet no man remembered that same poor man. Then said I, wisdom is better than strength. Nevertheless, the poor man's wisdom is despised, and his words are not heard. The words of a wise man are heard in quiet more than the cry of him that ruleth among fools. Wisdom is better than the weapons of war, but one sinner destroyeth much good." Think about what's said about wisdom here. Wisdom can deliver a city, but the world won't recognize that wisdom, especially if it comes from somebody that they don't perceive to be capable of that wisdom. Because if you're a poor man, this world sees you as foolish. Then the fact that wisdom is better than the weapons of war, the world would deny that. But it's the truth, and that context illustrated it, right? So flipping into the New Testament, just for time's sake, there's a lot we could talk about wisdom throughout the entirety of the Bible, but I just want to bring up a couple of different principles. So in Romans 16, 19, to the saints in Rome says, "For your obedience has come abroad unto all. I am glad therefore on your behalf, but I would have you wise unto that which is good and simple concerning evil." So simple and wise here, meaning innocent or to a degree naive, in the difference. Be wise concerning good, but simple concerning evil. You know, this matters. How we see things matters in a great many ways. I want to give you one thought as an example. In Titus 1, verse 15, it says, "Unto the pure all things are pure, but unto them that are defiled and unbelieving is nothing pure, but even their mind and conscience is defiled." I just want to illustrate this with something that you won't need to turn and look at. You already know about it. In Genesis chapters 2 and 3, Adam was told not to eat of the tree in the midst of the garden of knowledge, and he did it. And once they sinned, Genesis 3:7 talks about how their eyes of both of them were open and they knew that they were naked. If you were to put a 2-year-old boy and a 2-year-old girl and a bathtub. They're not going to lust after each other. They're innocent as can be. You see how under the pure all things are pure? So if we're wise, we learn to look at things through pure lenses. Now, we don't want to become naive. You know, there's a balance here, and sometimes people misbalance. Y'all know by now, if you've been listening to this podcast long enough, you know I like to emphasize balance. Well, there are people that might take that and want to run to an extreme. You don't want to be so naive that you don't understand things. You know, in Proverbs 14:15, the simple believeth every word, but the prudent man will look at well to his going. Being too naive makes you an easy target. You want to be aware of the evil of the world, but you want to look at things through pure eyes. And that's going to come through knowledge of good, with your focal point being on what's good. You know, over the years, one of the subject matters that just always is telling, when you talk about things in the Bible where certain sexual language is used, and people don't have a godly wisdom, and they look at it through carnal lenses, they react in different ways than those that are spiritually minded. The wisdom of God teaches us to look at things in the way we ought to, not to make us necessarily ignorant to the abuses or the sinful things, but to look at them through clear lenses. 1 Corinthians chapter 3, we talked about verses 18 through 20 earlier, how the wisdom of this world is foolishness with God. If we are wise, like Paul preached in 1 Corinthians chapter 2, where his preaching was not within in 1 Corinthians 2, 4, and 5, he said, my preaching was not with enticing words of man's wisdom, but demonstration of spirit and power, that your faith should not stand in the wisdom of men, but in the power of God. And then he talked about how the wisdom of God is what he preached from the Spirit. If you keep reading down to verse 13, he says, which things also we speak, not in the words which man's wisdom teaches, but what the Holy Ghost teaches, comparing spiritual things with spiritual. When we have godly wisdom, we understand the ways of the world are false. Now, let me just give you a simple illustration. I have been part of many discussions where people want to talk about evangelism. And one of the things that regularly happens is man starts to devise tactics. Well, let's try this or let's try that. Let's try this. And every single time I've ever been in that discussion, I said, but God says that the power is in the gospel, Romans 1:16. And I can't tell you how many times people have said, yeah, but. There's no yeah, but. The power is in the gospel. But this is what foolish people do. They trust in the wisdom of the world. They'll start saying things like, well, at work, we do this marketing campaign. Or, well, we've done this to reach out to people. You're not at work. You're in the kingdom. And the kingdom from which Christ is the head of all things, Christ is the head. He has the preeminence, Colossians 1:18. He says, preach the gospel. Evangelists like myself, when Paul wrote to Timothy, he told him in 2 Timothy 4 and verse 2, preach the word. Be instant in season, out of season, reprove, rebuke, exhort with all long-suffering doctrine. Man says, we're going to set up a special event. We're going to have guests this, or we're going to put on a puppet show, or we're going to go distribute this, or we're going to buy people turkeys, or we're going to do this or that. Nope, that's worldly wisdom. You've said to God, God, we know better than you do. No, you don't. His wisdom is preach the word. And then unbelievably, I can't tell you how many times people say, but it's not working. Oh, it is absolutely working. The fact that people reject the gospel is no different than they accept it. The work is to preach. The reception is on the hearer, not the deliverer. When Jesus came into this world, are you really going to take that stand? Well, the wisdom of the world will have you take that stand. When Jesus came to this world and preached the gospel, there were times like John 6:66, where in the context, Jesus gave a hard saying. John 6:60, many therefore of his disciples, when they heard this, said, this is a hard saying. Who can hear it? Verse 66, from that time, many of his disciples went back and walked no more with him. Are you going to say Jesus was failing? That he wasn't doing it the right way? That you know better? Well, guess what? When you use the world's wisdom, that's exactly what you're saying. Good luck with that one in the judgment day. Who is a wise man? The one that accepts that the wisdom of the world is foolishness with God. That's a wise man. Well, let me give you one more, and then we're going to move on. Ephesians 5, 15 through 17 says, "See then that ye walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise." And listen to this. I love this because it combines a lot of the points that we've been talking about. Redeeming the time. Think back to Ecclesiastes 8, 5, Ecclesiastes 9, 11 through 18. "Wherefore, be ye not unwise, but understanding what the will of the Lord is." So just kind of breaking this down a little bit. To walk circumspectly is to walk diligently, to walk accurately, to walk perfectly. If you look up Strong's number 199, you will see that. It is to be the opposite of fools, to be wise. You are going to understand the value of time in the sense of the measure of time. But also, like we talked about in Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 12, being aware of the times, so to speak, like where you're at, who you're among, what's going on in the world. And then be not unwise. And the definition of that in verse 17 for this context is the contrasting point of understanding what the will of the Lord is. So here, being unwise is not understanding what the will of the Lord is. Oh man, look at how we just use the Bible as a dictionary, a commentary. Isn't that great? God's definition of wisdom. We could have put more scriptures there, but a lot of them would have been repetitive of the points we made. We made different points with different scriptures. Ladies and gentlemen, that's some Bible study. I hope you love that part. But we want to talk about the rest of James 3:13. I wanted to emphasize the main point because that's going to be the point that we kind of build on when we go through verses 14 through 18 a little bit. We're going to talk about the wisdom that does not descend from above, but is earthly, sensual, and devilish. So godly wisdom, there it is. Bible definition of what we're talking about. But James 3:13 also says, after who is a wise man? And, so connecting that point, endued with knowledge among you. That word endued with knowledge means to be intelligent. What a challenge in this present world. And somebody would say, well okay, what's he meaning there? Look, real simple. Don't be stupid. Somebody would say, oh, I don't like that word stupid. In the Bible, the word brutish is used. Psalm 92 and verse 6 in the King James Version. A brutish man knoweth not, neither doth a fool understand this. Brutish means stupid. Don't be stupid, okay? Don't be foolish. Understand. Don't practice stupidity. In Proverbs 12 and verse 1, whoso loveth instruction loveth knowledge, but he that hateth reproof is brutish. Again, stupid. Don't be stupid. Be in a person who has knowledge, somebody who is endued with knowledge, somebody that is intelligent. I want you to just think real simple. If you looked at a fully capable adult, turn on a stove, let the burner, let's say it's an electric or a gas stove, whatever, let the burner ignite and let the heat go on, and then you see them say, I want to see if this is hot. And they smash their hand right down on the burner. Are you going to say that they're an intelligent person? No. You're going to say, that's stupid, right? Or in our modern world, you might use a synonym because you think the word stupid is offensive. You need to use the word stupid, okay? Because they need to be offended. They need to understand that what they did is somebody that is not endued with knowledge, somebody that is not intelligent. So who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? James is calling upon these saints to say, we need to see who has understanding. Well, the wise and the knowledgeable, as the verse goes on, show that they have wisdom and knowledge by their behavior, by their manner of life. Let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. What you do shows whether you're wise and intelligent or whether you're foolish and stupid. The word conversation just means behavior, manner of life, your conduct. Look it up, you'll see. And this is consistent with the scriptures. You don't need a dictionary. The Bible shows us, Deuteronomy 4 and verse 6, keep therefore and do them. It's talking about the commandments of the Lord in the context under the law of Moses. It says, for this is your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the nations which shall hear all these statutes and say, surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people. What's going to make them wise and understanding? By knowing the law of the Lord and doing it. And it is visible to other people. Look at how the Bible explains the Bible. Psalm 37 and verse 30 says, the mouth of the righteous speaketh wisdom, and his tongue talketh of judgment. The law of his God is in his heart. None of his steps shall slide. Verse 31. You can see wisdom and hear wisdom by observing people. So show it. Show that you're wise. Show that you're intelligent. Proverbs 10:13, in the lips of him that hath understanding is wisdom found, or wisdom is found. But a rod is for the back of him that is void of understanding. Wise men lay up knowledge, but the mouth of the foolish is near destruction. God is telling us, when you talk and when you act, your wisdom and intelligence is displayed therein. It is that simple. I want you to think about how Jesus taught something in Matthew chapter 7, and how he illustrates it that just will prove this point even further. He says in Matthew chapter 7, verses 21 through 27, not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father which is in heaven. Many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in thy name? In thy name cast out devils? In thy name, excuse me, let me take a quick drink. So I'm going to back up here to verse 22. Many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in thy name, and thy name cast out devils, and thy name done many wonderful works? Then will I profess unto them, I never knew you. Depart from me, ye that work iniquity. Therefore, tying back to what he just said, whosoever heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them, I will liken him to a wise man, which built his house upon a rock. And the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew, and beat upon the house, and it fell not, for it was founded upon a rock. And everyone that heareth these sayings of mine, and doeth them not, shall be likened unto a foolish man, which built his house upon the sand, and the rain descended, the floods came, the wind blew, and beat upon the house, and it fell, and great was the fall of it. Your conduct shows whether you're wise and intelligent, or foolish and stupid. We'll see it and we'll hear it when you act and when you talk. So show wisdom and intelligence. Saints know, faithful saints know, that conduct before men matters. The evangelist Timothy was told in 1 Timothy 4 and verse 12, let no man despise thy youth, be thou an example of believers in word, conversation, charity, and spirit, and faith, impurity. In 1 Peter 2 and verse 12, Peter says to the scattered Gentiles, having your conversation honest among the Gentiles, that whereas they speak against you as evildoers, they may by your good works, which they shall behold, glorify God in the day of visitation. And then later, in 1 Peter 3, he's talking to the Christian woman who's married to the non-Christian man, says in verse 1, likewise, you wives, be in subjection to your own husbands. If any obey not the word, they also may, without the word, be won by the conversation of the wives. That conversation, that same word we're talking about in James 3:13, your conduct, your behavior. And look, you know this. Most people I've ever studied with the Bible with have heard something like Matthew 5, 14 through 16. You're the light of the world. City set on a hill that cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and give light to all them that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. Let them see your good ergon, your good works, the Greek word ergon, let what you do. And listen, haven't we been talking about this in the book of James? James 2:18, in its context of James 2:14 through 18, about faith without works is dead. James 2:18, yea, a man may say, thou hast faith and I have works. Show me thy faith without thy works. I will show thee my faith by my works. It's what you do. It's what people hear and see in you that show whether you're a wise, intelligent person or a foolish, stupid person. We got to be cautious, though. Remember that there are people that can put on a show. We see that throughout the scriptures, people that appear to be one thing and are something else, false prophets which come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they're ravening wolves, Matthew 7:15. That context go on says in verse 16 and verse 20, wherefore by their fruits you shall know them. You know them by their fruits. Sometimes you got to look a little deeper than the surface, and that takes a little bit more time. So we want to be cautious because there are those in Colossians chapter 2, verses 20 through 23, who be dead with Christ from the rudiments of the world. Why is thou living in the world? Are you subject to ordinances? Touch not, taste not, handle not, which are all to perish with the using after the commandments and doctrines of men. Notice verse 23, which things indeed have a show of wisdom and will worship, that is, the desire of the human, will worship and humility and neglecting the body, not in any honor to the satisfying of the flesh. So sometimes people put on a good show. You need to look a little bit deeper than the surface. So, who is a wise man, a dude with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness and wisdom. That is our study for today. Should have given you a lot to think about. What do you see when you honestly examine your life? What do other people see when they examine your life? You need to care. You need to take that into consideration. If you profess to be a Christian, you need to make sure that people see God in you to his glory. People see Christ in you to the glory of the Father. I will go ahead and leave our lesson right there. If all goes according to plan, be back on Sunday. So I want to thank you so very much for listening. If I can be of assistance, just check me out on the website, wordsoftruth.net. Get a hold of me by phone or email. You can text me or call me. And if you're seeking the truth, I'll be more than happy to help you with it. So until next time, I'll say goodbye.